Hi, this is Smriti Kirvanandan, your host for Health Forward Podcast. One of the most important things you can do for yourself is to take care of your health. Your road to discovering an all-inclusive, empathetic, and innovative healthcare ecosystem starts right now. Innovation is the ability to see change as an opportunity, not a threat. A quote by Steve Jobs. In this episode, I'm in conversation with Dr. Michael Schlosser, who's the Chief Medical Officer and Senior Vice President of Care Transformation and Innovation at one of the largest healthcare systems in the United States, HCA Healthcare. In this role, he leads clinical and care innovation and transformation for the enterprise. He's tasked with establishing and leading a new department within HCA Healthcare's Clinical Operations Group called Care Transformation and Innovation. His vision is to redesign models of care within our acute care facilities, focusing on digitally enabled, patient-centered, and highly efficient care delivery. Michael, welcome to Health Forward. Such a pleasure to have you here.
Oh, great to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Michael, you've been a neurosurgeon, and now you're spearheading care transformation and innovation for HCA. Tell us more about your journey to healthcare.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a bit of a circuitous route that I took to get to where I am today. But I like to think of care transformation innovation as actually coming back to something that I started with. So when I was young, I went to MIT to study chemical engineering and was very interested in mathematics and problem solving. And this was in the early 90s, so the very early days of things like neural networks. And all that caught my attention. But my father is a physician, and so I was always sort of set on that path. I was sort of taught from very young that that was a career path to aspire to. So I went from MIT to Yale to study medicine and then end up training as a neurosurgeon. Did take a slight detour during my neurosurgery training where I went and worked at the FDA for a couple of years as a medical officer. So sort of came back to that technology space briefly, but then moved to Nashville about 18 years ago to practice neurosurgery. I loved complex spine. I loved the challenges of taking really challenging spinal deformities and putting them back in order, so to speak, and really didn't intend to do anything other than practice neurosurgery. And then met a great leader, a guy by the name of Ravi Chari, who was a transplant surgeon, who had a vision for being able to use data, especially scaled healthcare data, to drive better outcomes for patients. And so he got me excited about that vision. I worked with him on some projects when he was the chief medical officer of our hospital, got more excited by that work. He talked me into going to get an MBA at Vanderbilt, which I did, and ended up liking that a whole lot more than I even expected to. And really at that point had sort of mentally made the shift that I wanted to move on to solving problems on a bigger scale. I really liked leadership and liked the opportunities that it could afford you to touch more patients and to do more good. And so I took my first role as a chief medical officer for a group purchasing organization that HCA owns called HealthTrust. My background in medical devices at the FDA certainly helped me in that job. And then did that for a couple of years, caught the attention of HCA proper, the leadership of the organization. They asked me to come over and be a chief medical officer for the national group, which at the time was about 100 hospitals. And so spent then about 5 years flying around the country, visiting our hospitals, basically doing deep dives into hospital strategy and growth and operations and finance and clinical and quality. And obviously as the CMO, I was responsible for the clinical and the quality, but I was involved in all of those conversations. And so really spent 5 years learning from that perspective, how the healthcare system actually functions. And that led me to about 2.5, coming up on 3 years ago, when I made a pitch to our CEO that that we needed a different approach to how we leverage technology to change care delivery. That if we really wanted to leverage our data and our scale and our capabilities to create a new way to deliver care that was digital and technology enabled, that we would need a focused and dedicated effort on it. And to his credit, he agreed and said, go start such a thing. And so I was allowed to launch this program that is Care Transformation and Innovation. And we've been at it for about 2.5 years now.
Amazing. What I really love about what you shared was you painted this beautiful picture of just connecting the dots. And as a physician, you've been on the front row, you've done the work. And now you're behind the scenes, really making the change, innovating and transforming. But you have an eye for both sides of the coin, which I think is very critical. And I'm just truly impressed from a neurosurgeon to work in FDA, which means that you must love details, which is good to know. And also an eye for innovation. But thank you so much for sharing your story, Michael. And I know you've started the Care Transformation Innovation Unit right at the brink of COVID. And I'm sure it's been a very interesting time for you. Expand a little bit more about what that's been like and what has changed for you.
Yeah, well, so COVID really was part of the inspiration for launching this new program. Never let a good crisis go to waste, right? So we were in the middle of COVID, really. It was early, very beginning of 2021. And we're increasingly frustrated with the fact that the technology in our hospitals was not really helping us solve this problem that was the pandemic. We made amazing investments and have access to amazing technology that's patient-facing. Think surgical robots and focused ultrasound machines and all of this technology that delivers care. But the technology sort of right above that, that stitches all the care together, that helps the hospital run, helps clinicians do their jobs, helps enable workflows, that, and this is not an HCA issue, this is a healthcare system issue, that has been inadequate and really hasn't kept up with the times. And so a ton of manual process exists in hospitals and other healthcare settings. A lot of paper processes still exist. And so it's very hard to sort of layer technology on top of that. And then you add to that the fact that doctors and nurses are rightfully resistant to change because they have life or death situations that they're dealing with. And you find yourself, and we found ourselves at a bit of a crossroads where we said, if we're really going to make progress here, if we're going to have this new version of healthcare delivery, it's going to take something other than just sort of who's the latest technology vendor or what's the latest great idea that's out there. And so that was sort of the spark that led to developing this new team, this multidisciplinary approach, heavily focused on change management, heavily focused on process and the voice of the end user, but then also integrated with technology, data science, AI, and machine learning. And we thought all of those things together could really unlock some amazing potential for healthcare delivery. So that was really the spark, was we had this massive challenge the pandemic threw at us, and it caused us to think a little differently.
I love that you didn't want to waste a good crisis, or a bad crisis actually in this case, and really made it to use. Michael, the clear differentiator I found when I really read up with the work you're doing is that you're leading with a clinically led technological innovation, which I have not come across. I think people generally talk about technology and innovation, and they do talk about using the healthcare problems, but they really don't narrow it down to this wording and this phrase. But I would love to understand from you, how are you connecting these dots on a daily basis, and what does the process flow look like?
Yeah. So our CEO, Sam Hazen, caught a few headlines when he was at the health conference about a year and a half ago. And he said something to this extent that big tech was not going to be able to disrupt or solve healthcare. And then he went on to explain that it was going to require partnerships between the best of technology and the best of healthcare delivery. Of course, the headline was just the first piece that Sam Hazen says big tech won't disrupt healthcare. But what he was really speaking to was exactly the question that you're asking, which is, we have to actually embed the technology into the workflow. And if we're going to do that, then we got to work directly with the clinicians, the end users who are going to take advantage of the technology and really design the solutions around them. Otherwise, we're just sort of back to that layering on top of them. And so I would agree. I think this is the differentiator for CT&I, which is how we refer to our department, in that we have these two innovation hub hospitals, and then we have a bunch of other innovation partner departments across our network. And my teams are embedded in those hospitals. Mm-hmm. And we do what's referred to in the rest of the world as user-centered design, which is something that healthcare has not really done a ton of in the past, but obviously it's commonplace elsewhere in technology. But really, we bring the engineers and the data scientists right into the hospital. We understand the problems we're trying to solve. We listen to the care team members, the doctors, the nurses. They sort of tell us their perspective, why they currently do it the way they do it, how they would like to do it, if they could do it better. And it's that collaborative back and forth approach that really has led to the success we've had so far. The other thing that I think is unique is we have these innovation hubs that this is a full-time job for them. We've trained them up to be what we call clinician innovators. And so it's not like we're going to a different hospital or a different unit every time we do a pilot and we're sort of starting from scratch and having to sort of explain to them why we're here and what we're trying to do, these hospitals understand the CT&I mission. They know how we do our work. They're used to how we show up, and they've gotten good at iterative design, at trying out new things, knowing that what they're trying is probably not going to work, but it fails in a way that we learn from it. They give us the feedback, and then we iterate and we keep going until we get it right. And so they're used to that process. Whereas in the past, when we would show up with a pilot, if it didn't work, that was sort of the end. It was like they would sort of get frustrated that the solution wasn't solving their problem. And now they understand this is a journey and it's a process. And it's one that actually never ends, that even when we feel like we're at a good point and the product is solving a problem, it will continue to evolve over time, especially solutions that include AI. So this has been key. And when we say clinically led integration of technology into care, that's really what we mean. Is it's not that the clinicians make all the decisions. It's very multidisciplinary, but we do the work right there in the hospitals at the bedside.
I love that connection. I'm also curious, you know, working in healthcare myself, this is going to require a lot of data collection, analysis, and review. So I'm curious to know, one, what are you using to collect the data, and how frequent is your review process, and how quickly are these being implemented, just approximately?
Yeah, so data is everything to this work. I always say an AI strategy is really a data strategy. And so that's really where the partnership with Google has come in a big way. And honestly, one of the reasons why we picked Google as our partner, we obviously could have gone with any of the hyperscalers, was we felt like they had the strongest chops when it came to the data itself, the rigor around the structures and architectures they built to understand and store and organize healthcare data. We felt was a cut above the others. And so they've been an amazing partner for the last 3 years. This is also an ongoing journey. The products they've helped us build are great, but there's still work to be done. We're working with them on a thing that we call our Healthcare Intelligence Net, or HIN. And it's a lake house architecture, which is, again, not something new, but it's a great architecture for storing tons and tons of raw data and then bringing more and more organization to it as you sort of move up the floors of the house. And so that's the main approach that we take. I would say the principles behind that are, we want all the data. We want every single piece of data that every system and every machine and every hospital can spit out. And we want to dump it all into this data lake. And we're starting to do this now. And then we'll slowly figure out how to organize it and how to use it. But the more, the better. And cloud computing gives you the ability to be that greedy when it comes to data. So that's really been a critical part of the strategy. And then as you get higher up sort of in that lake house architecture, you bring more and more of the clinicians and the business folks in, and they're the ones that help us understand, okay, for this data, what do we want to see? How frequently? How should it be organized? How should it be stored? And so we organize into these data products that are really more customer facing, the customer being us. And it's a curated data experience for the end users who are building AI applications or reports or analytics or whatever it is that the business needs.
Amazing. I know Ashima Gupta from Google Cloud is a good friend, and I'm always impressed by the great work they've done. And I truly believe that each data point is someone's touch point in their life story. So it's amazing that he focused on the entire collecting all the data and then figuring out the structure and the unstructured chaos of it, right? You know, we are all soaked up by the power of generative AI right now. I mean, everywhere I look, when I sleep and I get up, this is all I hear about. So how are you directly integrating this and mapping this into positive patient outcomes?
Yeah. And so Ashma and I have actually spent a lot of time on this topic of generative AI. And we're caught up in it as well. And I would say that I'm of two minds when it comes to generative AI, really. I think the hype is actually real. I think these things are as powerful or maybe even more powerful than we think they are. And I think that's going to unlock amazing capabilities in healthcare. But it's not as easy maybe as everyone wants to make it out to be to actually integrate them into healthcare workflows. So they're powerful, but they're also risky. When I talk about Gen AI, I always quote Spider-Man, with great power comes great responsibility. So I think that's highly true in generative AI. You really have to understand them, understand what they're good at and what they're not good at. And in particular in healthcare, things like omissions and hallucinations can be problematic in some very serious ways, depending on the use case. So we think about generative AI use cases in a few ways. First is being really careful with use case selection. I think we have a responsible AI program that we're just standing up in HCA Healthcare, and part of it is use case selection. And I think we as an industry need to be careful here to not jump to things like Dr. ChatGTP, where you're asking it specific healthcare advice, but instead use the power of the tool to help our doctors and nurses do their jobs better. We have this thing called administrative burden. It's all the extra steps, all the extra stuff we've asked doctors and nurses to do, documenting, correcting data in the system, going between different systems to find information. And those are things that generative AI actually can be a really great partner on. So we're building solutions, and we have a partner called Augmetics that we're doing with this. A physician can have an AI agent in their pocket that can assist with documentation, but not just ambient speech, not just listen to them interview a patient, but really understand the context of that patient, look in the EHR and understand other data about that patient that might be relevant, and bring all that together. And again, be a partner, be an assistant to the physician or the clinician as they're doing that interview and going through that episode of care. We're looking at similar opportunities on the nursing side, where it can be an assistant to the nurse in doing assessments or in recording needed data like pain scores or do hourly rounds. So we see these AI assistant or AI agent assistants as a really powerful way to use generative AI that also limits the risk, so that we're not getting out there too far and asking it to do things that could create risk and harm to patients. I'm very passionate about building trust with AI as being the critical first step for our industry. We've got to figure out how we get doctors, nurses, patients, everyone to trust these AI solutions. And we can do that by having the AI be a helper to them instead of a threat to them for the first use cases that we select. Another really interesting use case we're working on is nurse handoff. So nurses hand off patients from one shift to the next shift. We do that about 400,000 times a week across HCA Healthcare. And handoffs are a risky part of care delivery. And so we're building an AI agent, and this is a very tight partnership with Google, that can parse the data in the EHR. So kind of think like a nurse thinks in terms of what are the most important pieces of data that I need. And that'll probably be one model that'll do that, and then pass it to another model, a large language model, that can take that relevant data and turn it into something useful, into a nice summary, a nice timeline, and an interactive tool that the nurse can ask questions to. So we're in the process working with Google to build that handoff tool, which I think will be an amazing advantage for our nurses.
Now, this is amazing. I know, just hearing you talk, I can see that you're focused on each touch point and each handoff to make sure there's efficiency and there's more integrity in that process. But you also touched on two points that kind of stood out to me. One is the medical errors, and the next is the admin burnout. I know there are a lot of softwares right now that can be plugged and played for just clinical decision making, just to create more accuracy. You're a physician, Michael, and there are a lot of errors being done. And I think burnout plays a role in that. And with physicians and yourself moving to the management side, I'm curious, what are your perspectives on two things? One is, how do we manage physician burnout? How do we keep them in the workforce? And secondly is medical errors. Like, how do you, apart from the responsible AI, how do you see generative AI playing a role in really reducing that?
Yeah. So we have a very specific line of thinking, or I do, and I think most of my team agrees when it comes to this particular question. So we've studied this pretty carefully, and our physicians and other clinicians are spending around 30%, but in some cases up to 50% of their time on administrative or non-value add tasks, basically doing things that someone other than the patient needs them to do, be it a regulator or an insurance company or us, the hospital system. So when we think about burnout, I just think about that 30 to 50%. And I think if I can return a meaningful portion of that time back to them, and they can spend that time either with the patients, where the patients need it, and a lot of them need a lot more time than we're currently able to give them, or with their families or on their home life, we could take a huge chunk out of burnout. Because I think the main reason physicians are burned out is that they're not satisfied with the majority of the work that they're doing. They're not spending their time doing critical thinking and solving hard problems and comforting patients and having conversations with the families where it's needed. They're doing all this other stuff. And if we can return that time to them, they'll be more satisfied, they'll be happier. And I truly believe that a happier, more satisfied physician is going to make a lot better decisions. So the first one potentially helps us solve the second one, where we kind of clean up workflow for them and they have more time. They can slow down a little bit. They can think a little more. And maybe that means less errors are made in acute care or in the outpatient setting or wherever they happen to be. But then I think that even beyond that, because I'm not just satisfied with doing the best we can with the workforce as they currently are, I think the AI can help them in that decision making. So again, not like ask the AI, what's the diagnosis of this patient? But the AI can bring information that they may not have seen from a health information exchange record or from some deep part of the EHR from multiple visits beforehand. Or it can see patterns in the data that the physician may just not have had time to see because they're moving from patient to patient. And so AI surfacing that data, but doing it in such a way that it's inside the workflow for the physician. So it's not another burden where they have to go to another system to look for it, but it's right there in front of them. Again, thinking about Augmedics, right there on the phone, the AI agent is bringing this data forward. That's another step up in terms of reducing those errors. So now you have people who have time and they have all the right information they need. Then we may find beyond that sort of really critical life or death situations where we say, we want to add to that some AI-driven decision support, where the AI thinks you're sort of going down the wrong path, it may nudge you towards a different path. But to me, that's still out there in the future. I want to see how far we can get with those first two steps and then use AI very judiciously for the last one.
Yeah, I really like the fact that you're focusing on two things. One is a simplification, and secondly is really allowing physicians to do what they were trained to do, which is take care of people, not the rest, which is, yes, you know, it shouldn't be rocket science, but here we are. But yep. What challenges do you see on the front row that you believe has to be solved by policy or just by humans and not by technology?
Yeah, there's a few. So probably the biggest one is around data. We talked about data being the key to all of these strategies. And so there's a lot that we can do, as I described with Google, to try to organize our own data. But ultimately, there's a universe of data out there about patients that right now is still not easy to access. And the work that's been done with interoperability at the federal level has helped. We've made progress, but there's still more progress that needs to be made. We need to get to the point where a patient's data, complete 360-degree view of that patient's medical history and other relevant history is more readily available to the clinicians who need to take care of them. And that is very much a policy, but it's also sort of a philosophical issue that I think we need to tackle as a society almost, that the value of that data in making sure we maintain the health of that patient is as important in a way as the privacy of that data, that we have to do both. We can't just say that the data has to be locked up and secure because it's very private and sensitive. Of course it is, but we have to be able to do that and at the same time, make it highly available and highly interoperable. And so there's still work to be done there. I think the other issue, and this has very little to do with technology, is around how we license and credential clinicians. So one thing that AI and technology is going to unlock is the amazing potential for any patient across the entire United States, let's just talk about the US, to get access to the best possible care from the best possible specialists. And you can do that with cloud computing and network systems. You can pretty much do it today, but there's a huge barrier, which is that the licensure is all state by state based. And so we literally run into situations where that becomes the barrier to taking the next step. I'll give you a very real example. We're very interested in digital pathology. How could we have the best pathologist, the one who's subspecialty trained in that specific neuro-oncology subspecialty that this patient who had a biopsy in Florida needs, how do we get them in sort of real time, short period of time, access to that expertise? Well, you can do it through the network, but it's a very big barrier to say we need every pathologist credentialed in every state and in every hospital and licensed in every state and every hospital. So this is something that it was talked about during the pandemic. We obviously had waivers in place there that were helpful, but now we've sort of fallen back to the old ways of doing things. But I think we got to realize that we're a global economy, but at the very least realize that we're a country where people move around to seek care all the time. And we should make our sort of licensing approaches mimic that.
You know, that's very interesting. You know, when you hold back information, it can really rob someone from intimacy and actual freedom, right? It's the same example for me. When you hold back certain data points for a patient, we can't give the complete care and we can't connect them to the right physician or the clinician. So I think that's a fantastic point you made. And when I was in Davos recently, one of the people were talking about how they can use a fingerprint and really start developing this technology where they can use a person's fingerprint, but then get all their healthcare data points. It's basically literally health at your fingertips. What would your concerns be with an innovation like that?
Well, you have to figure out a way to secure it, of course.
Right.
But I think that I love data. So I'm going to say that I wouldn't be particularly concerned about an innovation like that. If you could get through the change management and get people comfortable with the fact that we can secure this information and bad actors are not going to get access to it, I think that idea is brilliant. I actually was in Portugal last year at a IHF summit and spoke to a woman from Poland who was doing something very similar using blockchain, where basically in the blockchain, they would record the consent from the patient to get access to all their healthcare data. And so that was the protection. It's in the blockchain, it can't be adulterated. They sort of have control over it. But anyone that they gave that sort of passport to, a doctor or a researcher, could then use that consent in the blockchain to get access to any healthcare data from anyone about themselves. And so they'd say, yes, I want to participate in this research study because I have breast cancer and you're studying cures for breast cancer and you can have access to all my data. Here's the link to the blockchain. And then that is the key now that that researcher has to go out to any healthcare provider, any pharmacist, you name it, to go and collect all of the data. And so I thought that was a brilliant solution. Again, there's a lot of challenges in the technical aspects of how you would get people to do those consents and the whole process. But I think something like that is going to be necessary. And I love the fingerprint idea. It takes it even to another level so that the data still is completely controlled by the patient. But then when it makes sense, they can allow the people who need to have access to it.
Right. Michael, it's very interesting with you that fortunately and unfortunately, because I feel like the conversation can keep going on, that every answer of yours has more answers. You mentioned something which said change management, which I think is very, very critical, right? Especially when we do digital transformation or innovation, we often forget talent management and what really happens around that. We'd love for you to just touch point on what are your challenges and hopes when you're doing transformation, innovation, and change management.
Yeah, well, change management is one of the biggest challenges. And I mentioned it earlier that healthcare moves very slowly. We often refer to it as a glacial pace, often for good reason, but we need to start evolving the way we think about change. And so I had the opportunity to give grand rounds to a bunch of residents in training just yesterday. And I talked about this very subject. And I told them that if you're going to be a leader in healthcare in the future, change leadership will be your superpower. If you are good at leading change and helping people understand that we need a new version of healthcare where we're change agile and we can try new ideas and we can do it in a safe way, and we're not afraid of sort of controlled failures as long as there are no patients harmed as a result, that that's going to be the key to sort of this rapid iteration that allows us to take advantage of technology. So my team spends a lot of time on change management. And we spend it at multiple different layers of the organization. I mean, there's organizational change management. There's a lot of folks who feel like healthcare is working okay for us the way it currently works. And so why do we need to disrupt everything? And then all the way down to the bedside caregivers who may be hungry for change because they don't love the way we're currently doing it, but they're scared of it because ultimately they feel responsible for the patient who's in the bed. And so the number one thing that we do, which is not an exciting solution, is just be very intentional about it. Every time we're asking someone to change, we think about that change. We catalog it. We understand it. We say, why are they going to be resistant to it? And then we come up with strategies to help mitigate that, to help talk them through it. But I really think change management is going to be a key leadership skill for healthcare leaders going forward. And if we get good at it, it's going to unlock great things from a transformation perspective.
Of course, you have another answer within your answer, which is empathy, which is what exactly you mentioned. We need to have empathy when we request change to happen, especially for physicians to adapt. What exciting, innovative companies or solutions have you discovered in this process of yours?
Yeah, so we've really kind of run the gamut here. And I have a piece of my team, a handful of people who manage what we call ecosystem, which is who are all the innovative people out there in the world who are solving problems that we should know about, from startups to large companies to other health systems. And so we're constantly sort of mining that ecosystem for ideas. I'll tell you, to this point, it's actually been some of the big players that have ended up being the best partners to us. So I mentioned Google. They've been terrific. Their research teams, their folks working on large language models, they're very aligned with us and they're thinking about what responsible AI looks like. And so that helps because the cultures align. So Google's been a tremendous partner. Another partner we discovered about a year and a half ago was Palantir. And they can be a little bit of a controversial company, I realize. They do a lot of work for the government and NSA and things like that. But on the healthcare side, and that's all firewalled off from the commercial business, but on the healthcare side, they have really passionate people. And so they have these, what they refer to as embedded engineers, where they send their tech people out into the world, out into our hospitals to work with us and build solutions. And so we've done a big labor management solution with them where we're building an intelligent application that can help our nurses and nurse leaders sort of staff their units in a way that works for them and works for the patients and works for the hospital all at the same time. So they've really been a terrific partner, and we're continuing to explore additional ways that we can work with them. I sit on the board of a company called Commure, and this is a general catalyst portfolio company. And we sold them a piece of software called Patient Keeper a while ago, and that's why I sit on their board. But they have some very forward-thinking leaders and engineers, too, who are trying to build an operating system for healthcare, basically a place where all of the applications and technologies that we would use to run a healthcare system could sort of live together harmoniously, taking advantage of data and systems. And so that's still a very early work in progress, but something that I'm very bullish about really having an impact when it's fully formed.
This is incredible because I can sense a disruptor within you, and it seems like you're circling yourself around the right stakeholders. What is your vision for the next few years for HCA, and what are the internal and external collaborations you're seeking to make this come true?
Yeah, so my vision for the next few years is not at all ambitious. I just want us to be the leader in healthcare technology and innovation. But no one will ever accuse me of having small goals. I can assure you that. But I really think it's possible. I mean, we're the largest health system in the U.S. We have the most data, and we have the wherewithal. We're successful financially, and so we have the capital and the resources. So I actually think it's completely doable. And so I would love to see us 3-5 years from now being at the forefront of using intelligent applications to solve big problems in healthcare for our clinicians, our doctors, our nurses, our administrators, really create a healthcare system environment where technology makes it easy to do your job and to do it well. And so that's really what we're working for. And we're trying to take kind of sort of incremental steps in hopefully in big chunks to get to that future vision. We actually created the vision. We created a magazine that's a magazine from 2030 that sort of describes what it is like to work in HCA healthcare in the year 2030. And so it was a way of aligning my team and others around us to what it is that we were working for. And so it's this very idealized future where the technology sort of just surrounds the patient and the care team and sort of just helps them do everything it is they need to do. And they can spend all their time focused directly on the patient, which I think is a really beautiful vision for the future. The most important partnerships that I focus on right now are actually internal. Like, we've got a lot of good partners. I mentioned them, Google, Palantir, Commure. There are a few others lined up to help us bring the best of technology. But what I need more of, and we get this, but we need more of it, is smart people from across the healthcare industry, inside HCA or even outside, that can help us understand the problems and understand how to solve them. And then also be change leaders when we come up with good solutions and sort of drive those solutions. As soon as I get a platform, a technology platform, an intelligent application in the hands of all of our doctors and nurses, then they can become the innovators. They can start figuring out, okay, what else could we do with this? How else could we advance care delivery using these platforms? And so I need that partnership across the organization to sort of rally around this vision so we can together drive it over the next 3 to 5 years.
Practicing leadership myself, I always admire when someone has clarity and decisiveness, which you do, and having a 2030 vision already on the board and your team marching towards that is wonderful to hear, Michael. This brings us to a last question. As you're a dreamer, what are the three hopes for the future of healthcare?
Yeah, I think number one has to be eliminating all the administrative burden. We really have made the delivery of healthcare challenging. And people always ask me, do you miss practicing neurosurgery? Do you miss operating? And I always give the exact same answer, which is I miss actually standing in the operating room. I had an amazing team around me. I had just like the best people to work with. And so we did really hard, challenging things and we had fun doing it. So yeah, that's an experience that's a little hard to replicate in anywhere else other than in an OR. But outside of that, if I'm being honest, I really don't miss practicing. And it's mainly because it had become so burdensome. There were just so many extra steps, so many extra phone calls to the payers to justify X, Y, and Z, and like so many just barriers between me and what it is that I thought my patients needed in order to get better. And so I want to erase all that. I want the delivery of healthcare to be joyful again. And I think it's totally possible. The second thing I want is to figure out how we build trust. And it's trust with the technology, trust with AI, trust with the leaders who run those systems. I mean, we should be, as HCA, we should be one of the most trusted companies in the world because we're in healthcare. And so I think we're one of the most ethical companies. That's a great start. But I think that trust is critical. And this is an opportunity with technology, especially with transparency. We didn't talk a ton about responsible AI, but a big piece of that is transparency. I think we can build amazing trust with our patients and with our caregivers. And then the last thing, which is it's not a goal because it never ends, is change. I just think we need to become a change agile industry, and for us organization, but industry that is constantly looking to how we do better. And then we've got the tools and the resources and the wherewithal to do better. And so I'd love to see us get to a point where healthcare is not sort of the butt of a joke about how slow it takes for people to adopt best practices or evidence-based medicine, and instead is something that people look to and say, that's what good looks like. That's what continuous improvement and always trying to do better should be.
Michael, thank you so much. And I would like to end this with a quote from the Japanese culture called Ichigo Ichi, which means for this time, once in a lifetime, which means that no matter how many more times we meet, this time, this conversation, this experience will never be repeated ever again. So Michael, thank you so much for your time, for your space, and the wonderful work you do. It's wonderful to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening. This is Health Forward Podcast, and I'm your host, Smriti Kirbanandan.